So, this practice that we're sharing, we're connecting into on this retreat, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, it's inspired by my teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya. I can't say I'm teaching what he teaches because always, whatever we receive, it gets kind of informed and integrated into our own understanding. And so I'm expressing my understanding of what I've learned through practicing using his teaching. Plus, it includes, my understanding is informed by all of my teachers before Sayadaw Utejaniya. So there's a very strong emphasis on my understanding of what Sayadaw Utejaniya teaches. The emphasis in the practice that we'll be doing is exploring how to explore the mind itself, how to explore our recognize awareness, explore our relationship to experience. Whenever something happens in experience, we have a relationship to it. We're not simply like cameras watching what's happening or microphones recording sound and neutrally taking it in. We have a relationship to it. Often we have a relationship of wanting, leaning into the pleasant, wanting more of that, wanting to move away from the unpleasant. We have ideas and opinions about what's happening that inform or influence how we respond to experience. A lot of views that inform how we relate to experience or what we even think is happening. It's kind of amazing how much our own mental processes inform and influence what we are experiencing. And so this practice is emphasizing learning how to explore the mind itself, learning how to explore our emotions, our attitudes, our relationships, our views, our perceptions, and the awareness, the knowing side of it. This in the mind, in our mental processes, the processes of how we relate to experience. This is where the Buddha's teachings say that our stress, our suffering, our struggle with experience, with life happens. That the stress, the suffering of our experience, the unsatisfactoriness, the unease, the distress, the range of feeling like there's some kind of something wrong goes from the subtlest kind of unease, there's just some offness, to full-blown what we would call suffering. And the Buddhist teachings point to whatever's happening in the world really strongly distressful or strongly unpleasant stuff happening in the world, things happening that are creating physical pain in our bodies, physical pleasure, things that we would think of are pleasant, things that we'd think of are unpleasant, that it's not that, it's not what is happening where the stress, that sense of unease, that the suffering, what we call suffering, is happening. The Buddha says that that happens in our relationship to experience, in our mind. And so that's why it's so powerful to explore the mind, get familiar with this relationship to experience. We need to know what is happening. It's not like we turn around and just look at the mind. The exploration is what is happening and what is my relationship to it? What is the relationship to it? And so this, we could talk about what is happening as the content of our lives. That's, you know, our relationships. It's not only that there's pleasant, unpleasant experience happening. It's the more complex stuff of our lives. The way we have to deal with health insurance or issues at work, all of that is what is happening. And then how are we with it? And so we don't want to just ignore the content. But we want to understand that there's content and there's how we're responding to it. And the how we're responding to it is really where the stress or suffering is. And this is good news, actually. I mean, it might sound kind of unfortunate that it's our own minds that are creating the stress and suffering. But if the situations of the world had that power to create the suffering, there would be no hope for freedom. No hope for ease and peace in our lives. So the Buddhist teachings point to the possibility that whatever is happening, there is a possibility for a peaceful heart, for an open heart that is not fighting with the reality, but is fully, clearly recognizing the reality and responding to that reality, responding to what is happening, not from fear or confusion or hatred or anger or some idea of what we think might be happening, but more with a heart that's open and able to respond with compassion, kindness, wisdom, balance of mind. And so sometimes we might think that if we found a way to be peaceful with what's happening, that we wouldn't do anything. Well, I mean, like, that's the way our mind works. Like, if I was okay with everything, why would I do anything? So our relationship with greed and aversion, with those movements of wanting things to be, you know, wanting to have things or wanting to get rid of things, the view or the belief that's kind of bound up or embedded in greed and aversion is something like, you need me in order to do things. You need me in order to have things happen in your life. And so the kind of habitual or familiar way that we have a go about navigating activity in our lives is often motivated by greed and aversion. And underpinning that, the delusion that greed and aversion are necessary to get anything done. So this practice begins to help us to see or to recognize that there are other motivations than greed and aversion that can inspire action. Compassion, wisdom, kindness, generosity, patience even. So the exploration of looking at that relationship and beginning to understand how greed and aversion work and create that suffering, that begins to help the mind to let go of greed and aversion. And we begin to land in a place where we're acting not out of greed and aversion, but out of other motivations. It's beautiful. We start to see that. So that's a little bit of a kind of a pep talk in terms of, or why we might do this, why we might do this practice. Begin to look at how our suffering happens and the very witnessing of it, the very exploration of it. One of the powers of this, of the mindfulness that the Buddha taught, wise mindfulness, looking at experience from the perspective of curiosity of, what is this experience as an experience? It doesn't sound like you're doing much. It's like, You're aware of something happen as something that's happening in the present moment. But one of the powers of that is that it creates the conditions for our system, and I think of this as a very organic process that happens with the practice. It's aligned with our own human processes that are very natural, that when we bring that kind of awareness, that kind of interest, oh, what is it like to be feeling confusion or anger in this situation? So here's the situation. Wow, the relationship to that, confusion, anger. So what's it like to be knowing that, feeling, recognizing, oh, there's anger happening right now. Anger as an experience. The power of mindfulness in meeting that is that we begin to get an education about what the experience of that relationship is, and in the case of anger, you know, what is the experience of anger? It's not very pleasant. It was kind of a major wake-up call for me the first time I actually noticed that anger hurt here. I hadn't really noticed that because I was so focused on what I thought this anger was doing for me and making, you know, it's kind of like I had this idea, well, this is going to make the other person really miserable for me to be really angry at them. And what I didn't notice is that it was painful here. The Buddha talks about anger like being picking up a hot coal. It burns us before it burns the other person. And so the process of being aware of these experiences begins to educate the mind, begins to educate the system on what suffering is and what suffering isn't. And the seeing of that, recognizing, oh yeah, this relationship, this is suffering. When we see that, the very exploration of that with mindfulness begins to reorient our system to want to let that go without our having to do it. And there's a lot of patience that's involved because just simply seeing it with mindfulness once, you know, see, oh yeah, anger, that hurts. That's not enough to make it like go away. It's a process of learning because the delusion embedded in those habits of mind, the delusion for me around, oh yeah, anger's going to make the other person miserable. That was so deeply embedded. It's like seeing once that anger hurt. It's like, yeah, I knew in that moment that it hurt. But the pattern or the habit of believing that so strong, so embedded. So it takes a while of seeing it. And there are times when it's not so easy to simply be with what is arising. And so there are some tools that we can bring in to help us to navigate those times when, for instance, anger is so strong that even trying to be aware of it, and I definitely saw this in my early practice, that trying to be aware of anger just pulled me right into the anger. And so needing to use some tools to step away from it, to redirect the attention. So this practice that we're going to be exploring together, I would say it's primarily a practice of receiving experience rather than directing the attention, rather than choosing what you are paying attention to. So the whole framework of this practice is, you know, relax and receive what's here. You don't have to pick a particular aspect of experience. You don't have to turn to the breath. You don't have to focus on anything in particular. The instruction or the encouragement is really, okay, what are you aware? And what is awareness aware of? Just what's obvious? What's obvious? So we're not directing the attention. We're exploring opening to receiving all aspects of our experience. What's happening in our bodies, what's happening in our minds. So the physical and mental aspects of experience, the what is happening, and then also encouraged to check in to how we are in relationship to what's happening. So we also have relationships to things happening in our minds. For instance, you know, getting frustrated and then being angry at ourselves for being frustrated. So we might just notice, oh, there's frustration, and then not notice there's a kind of background, you know, real irritation with ourselves for having that frustration. So that would be the relationship, the irritation, the relationship to the frustration. So we explore what is happening in body and mind, and then how we are in relationship to it. That how we are in relationship to it is often something that's so habitual that we don't really notice it, which is why there's a little bit of checking in. With the what is happening, we're very receptive. And then occasionally we kind of step back or check in and, okay, so this is what's happening. This is the obvious. And how is the mind in relationship to that? So a little bit of directing, but it's not directing in terms of turning and looking and focusing on. To me, the checking, the attitude is more like stepping back. It's like almost like, okay, all of this is happening. And what else is here? Is there some relationship that's also happening? So that it kind of widens the lens as opposed to narrowing the lens of our attention. So the practice of being aware of what is happening, kind of the whole show of experience, receiving experience of body, of mind. Because we're not focusing on any one experience, you know, often in our practice, in our meditation practice, in our exploration of mindfulness, we use a kind of a focus on an experience to help us with a continuity of mindfulness. We turn the attention to the breath and we notice that we're not being mindful because the attention has been pulled away from the breath. So we come back to the breath or something like that. That's often how we encourage a continuity of mindfulness by noticing a particular object and knowing when we're not with that object. When I first started practicing, I thought, you know, I would choose the object and, you know, I chose the breath. That was my primary object. And I thought that if the mind kind of lost touch with that, and that mindfulness meant I had to bring it back. That if the mindfulness wasn't where I had the intention for it to be, it wasn't mindfulness. And that's not quite right. Because we don't have to be intending to be aware of something in order to be aware of something. And we know this, actually. You know, we are walking down the street, maybe, you know, having a conversation with somebody or kind of attending to something. Maybe we're attending to something we're seeing in the field of vision. And then suddenly, you know, a motorcycle drives by and a very loud sound happens and our attention goes there. You know, we didn't have to consciously think, I'm going to pay attention to that motorcycle. It just happened. And so that shift of attention can happen with our intentional choice, or it can happen out of conditions, the condition of, you know, something suddenly, a sound suddenly arising, that seems to be a condition that tends to draw the attention. Or movement in the field of vision, that will draw the attention. Without our consciously thinking, I'm going to attend to that, we'll just find our attention there. And so we don't have to be choosing where the attention is in order to be mindful. So the practice here in terms of cultivating a continuity of mindfulness, and continuity of mindfulness is really where the power of wise mindfulness comes to be, strong. If we're, you know, mindful for a second and then not aware of what's happening and then mindful for a second, there can be some value in those moments of mindfulness, and we'll that's often where we start. But as the mindfulness starts to gain momentum and become more continuous, there is so much that we see about how our minds are working, where we are shifting to reactivity as opposed to responsiveness. So the continuity is really powerful. And so we do want to cultivate a continuity of mindfulness. But without having an object to do that with, what do we do? So the practice there around the continuity of mindfulness is beginning to get familiar with the experience of mindfulness itself, getting familiar with being aware. And I use these terms, mindfulness and awareness, synonymously. So when I say awareness, I mean mindfulness. Often that question comes up. For me, I actually like the word awareness better than mindfulness, because awareness, the word awareness to me is more evocative of the experience that happens when we know what's happening in the present moment. Mindfulness to me feels a little more intellectual or conceptual. Whereas the word awareness kind of evokes the experience to some extent. So I prefer to use the word awareness when I'm talking about mindfulness. So the getting familiar with what it is to be aware. And just right now, you know, are you aware? Are you aware? If you're listening to me, hearing this, hear that question, understand the meaning of that question, you are aware. You may not quite know how you know you're aware, but that's okay. It's kind of like, this is the beginning. This is where we begin, by just knowing that we're aware. And often at the beginning, we know that we're aware of something. So what are you aware of right now? What's obvious? The sound of my voice, seeing the screen, body sensations, what's obvious? So there's something that's we are aware of, and there's the awareness of it. So if you're aware of something clearly, consciously in the present moment, a body sensation, or more a broader sense perhaps of yourself in the moment, there is awareness there. So are you aware? So we cultivate this capacity to recognize awareness as kind of the reference point of how we it sounds odd, but how we know we're aware is by knowing that we're aware. And that capacity and the understanding of knowing that we're aware, that clarifies the experience of knowing what the experience of awareness is, the taste, the flavor of being aware. And it's not like we're turning around and looking at pure awareness. There's when there's awareness, there's something that we're aware of. So both things are there. We're aware of seeing, and we know that we're aware. There's hearing, and we know that we're aware of hearing. At first, it may feel more just like, yeah, I know there's hearing, so I guess I know I'm aware, but I don't quite know how I know that I'm aware. Over time, with the kind of interest or curiosity of, well, am I aware? Okay, yeah, I guess I am. I'm aware. Don't quite know how I know I'm aware. But I'm aware, and I'm aware of hearing, I'm aware of seeing, I'm aware of body sense. Yep, I'm aware. I know that I'm aware. That kind of curiosity about what is awareness, or what is the experience of awareness, begins to clarify it over time. It's a subtle experience in a way. It's kind of like the air we breathe. You know, we're not always conscious of the air we're breathing. But it's so pervasive. It's so pervasive. It's so common. It's so ordinary that we're not consciously aware of it. And the mindfulness, the awareness is kind of like that. It's really ordinary. And because we haven't attended to it, it's there. It's almost like so familiar that we don't think it's important to attend to. And so it takes some time to gain some a capacity to recognize it. One way that I find supports the whole process of this receiving, receptive awareness, the receiving what's happening, the recognizing the awareness, is relaxation. Relaxation of body, relaxation of mind. This is something Sayadaw Utejaniya emphasized so much. And I had had many teachers tell me to relax, but Sayadaw said it like, you know, so many times that I finally actually took in, oh, he's serious about this. You know, I kind of thought that the other teachers were, you know, really they wanted me to focus on something. And so it was just something about the way he really aimed at the exploration of relaxation that really got me to take it seriously. So a start, in a way, well, it's like the ground of what are the conditions that support awareness. Relaxation of body supports the mind to be relaxed a little bit. And when the mind is relaxed, when the mind is not reaching out to do this or that or to try to solve things or figure things out, when the mind is relaxed, what it does is know what's happening in the present moment. So very naturally, as we relax the body, as we relax the mind, this capacity to be aware is there. We don't have to make it happen. And so the relaxation is something that we can aim towards or kind of explore a little bit. Can we relax the body? Can we relax the mind? And then see, okay, what's here? Am I aware? And what's obvious? So we'll start with relaxation. And as Sayadaw did, I emphasize this a lot. Even during a meditation, I'll often bring it back in. Just relax, because the habit of focusing, the habit of, for many of us at least, is very strong. And so just remembering that we can relax and then notice what mindfulness is already noticing. It's a much more, I would say, it's a much less doing practice. So this also for some of us is a little bit of an adjustment, because we're used to, in some ways, doing something all the time. And that's what very much many of our cultures, our families have valued, is what we do and how we do it. To just settle back and receive and see what's happening, to not be in charge of what is happening, to not be in charge of where the attention is, and just to settle back. Often what will happen there is we'll start to see our relationship to wanting to do things, wanting to be in charge, wanting to be in control. And so that becomes a part of what we notice. So relaxation is kind of the beginning. And then mindfulness. I've talked about mindfulness a bit so far, you know, noticing that you're aware. Sayadaw encourages the use of questions, not to try to find answers to the questions, but just as a way to almost orient the mind to the present moment. So, you know, sometimes in other practices, many of you may know the practice of noting experience. So naming what's happening, you know, pressure, hearing, seeing, you know, so kind of naming what is happening. That's using a kind of a thought to kind of keep the attention connected to the experience. Sayadaw encourages instead questions. aware? Am I aware? And it can just be short, and like, just, am I aware? Aware with a question mark, aware? And not like naming what's happening, but more receiving, or, okay, aware. What's the experience of awareness? And what's obvious? What's here? The use of questions is, it's a little delicate. For some, it tends to create a busyness in the mind. It makes a lot of thinking. If that's happening for you, just set it down. You don't have to use the questions. But sometimes I'll find that if I'm finding the mind get a little bit drifty, bringing a question in will really help. Right. Okay. This is why I'm here. So if I'm just kind of floating, it's like, aware. Okay, aware of the drifty feeling. That's what's happening right now. So there's not a need to, pull my mind back to focusing on something, but just kind of re-infusing interest with aware and what's obvious. So aware of experience, aware, and what is the most obvious experience? These are the pieces of mindfulness. We become aware of mindfulness itself, of awareness itself, maybe not so clearly at first, but also aware of what's happening. So those are the mindfulness pieces. Another aspect of the Eightfold Path, that's what the Buddha taught. So he taught wise mindfulness. He also taught wise effort. How do we engage? How do we connect? How do we make effort in this practice? Wise effort is often a teaching around cultivate the wholesome. It's a teaching. Wise effort is a teaching around cultivating the wholesome, maintaining the wholesome that has arisen, abandoning the unwholesome, abandoning greed, aversion, delusion, cultivating the conditions for it not to arise. And we often think of that as a doing. We often think of wise effort as a doing. If there's something unwholesome arising, I should abandon it by turning my attention away from it, or whatever ideas we have about that kind of effort. And that can be useful. We'll talk about how that kind of fits in. But the way wise effort comes into this practice is really through the wise mindfulness. Because wise mindfulness itself, when we are able to be aware of what's happening in the present moment without reactivity, it incorporates the four wise efforts. So being mindful of something wholesome, just being aware, oh, what's happening right now is there's a lot of spaciousness and ease in the mind. Being aware of that cultivates the conditions for that to appear more frequently. So it's cultivating the wholesome when we are mindful of the wholesome. When we're aware of reactivity, when we're aware of aversion, aware of greed, aware of irritation, frustration, confusion, when we are mindful of that, when we know it's happening in the present moment, and can be aware of it in this like container of, oh yeah, that's what's happening. That's interesting. Can I know that? That creates the conditions for the learning about how it contributes to stress and suffering, and for the mind to begin, the system, the whole organism to begin to let go of it. So the being mindful of the unwholesome, the awareness of the unwholesome, creates the conditions for the letting go. Not that we have to do the letting go. It also creates the conditions for the future non-arising, because we begin to understand the way these states create suffering, cause suffering. And the mind begins to orient away from inclining towards that habit slowly over time. It's a very gradual process. But wise mindfulness both strengthens the wholesome and diminishes the unwholesome. So it incorporates the wise efforts. So we don't have to do, this is kind of the we could say the philosophy behind this receptive awareness. that the mindfulness itself, the wise mindfulness itself, that curiosity about what's here in the moment, is already doing those wise efforts. And then when we can't do that, when we can't simply be with those reactive patterns, then we might bring in a tool from wise effort. So there's a judgment, there's a discernment about how we use wise effort, our preference, or we're kind of preferencing simple receptive mindfulness in this practice. Just being aware, this is what's happening in the present moment. And another aspect of effort is how we engage, you know, how we apply our energy. I think this is a lot of where we get kind of knotted up in our usual meditations practice. We apply our energy with a little bit of kind of tension or stress or holding on. With the breath, for example, I did that a lot. You know, it's like I held on to that breath, and there was a lot of tension in the meditation. So that tension was behind the scenes and unwittingly was being reinforced as I was paying attention to the breath. And so the practice of receiving and being aware of how we are in relationship, that begins to help us see we might be holding on a little bit, having some tension with how we're practicing. The encouragement in this practice is to have a really light touch with the effort. So if in a sitting meditation, for instance, we might sit down and think, okay, I'm going to practice for 45 minutes right now. So I'm going to be mindful for the entire 45 minutes. And it's kind of like we try to pick up and hold on to mindfulness right at the beginning of the sitting. That doesn't usually work. You know, it's not actually possible to commit to being mindful 3 minutes into the future. We have to do it moment by moment. And so the encouragement here is in a moment, connect with the intention to be present, aware in this moment, and then do it again in the next moment. What's obvious right now? How about right now? In a moment, right now, as you're sitting here, what's obvious? You know, what are you noticing? And maybe right now I'll direct your attention to something. So let your attention kind of take in the experience of your hands. Maybe receive a breath. How about notice the contact of your body, where you're contacting a cushion or bench, chair, whatever you're sitting on. Feet on the ground. As I name each of those things, how hard is it to know it? How hard is it to be aware of it? It's actually not terribly difficult. Probably, if you were actually hearing my words, as I mentioned or said, notice the sensations of your hands. There was a kind of a connection to that with very little effort. That is the level of effort in a moment that's needed to be mindful. It's really light. We don't have to grab on and hold on to something. Just the amount of, you know, just knowing that that's what's here. And then in the next moment, that's what's here. That's what's challenging, is kind of keeping it going. It's not so hard to be mindful for a moment, for a split second. That's usually not so challenging. It's the continuity that's challenging and where we tend to get tight. So in this practice, there's an encouragement to just light touch moment after moment. And I'd say actually in most practices, this is really how it works. Light touch moment after moment. If you're with the breath, if you're paying attention to the breath, just enough effort for half a breath, just enough effort to connect for 2 seconds at most, 1 second. And then do it again for the out breath, you know, be there for the in breath, be there for the out breath. And the in-breath, That's all the effort you need. And it's the continuity or the keep connecting with that. What happens there is there's a momentum that builds. And then we don't have to kind of remember as often. So a light touch of effort, just enough to be with this. And then as we get familiar with what it is to be aware, with the experience of awareness, for myself, I find that, you know, I become aware and it's like, oh, yes, there's awareness right now. There's almost like a feeling of riding a wave of being aware. It has a momentum. It lasts as long as it lasts. And I can kind of ride that wave and then get sensitive to or familiar with the experience of kind of the mind beginning to kind of lose touch with that mindfulness and then emphasize the connection. So that initially it might need to be a pretty frequent reminding, oh, aware, what's here? What's next? Well, that's obvious. Moment after moment, noticing what's here. And then as the momentum strengthens, we begin to find we need to remind ourselves less frequently because the momentum is there. So the effort in this practice is not so much about strong holding on to experience and strong like focusing in, but more about the frequency. How much do we remind ourselves to be aware? When I first sat down with Sayadaw Utejaniya, the very first instruction he gave me is the only work you need to give your mind is to remind yourself to be aware. And then how frequently do we do that? How frequently is that necessary? So as we begin to get familiar with what it is to be aware, we begin to find that's all we need to do, just like aware. The of what we are aware of just becomes very naturally known as we connect with awareness. And yet at first, it's helpful to kind of consciously recognize, oh yeah. And because we may not be so familiar with the awareness itself, it's helpful to know, yeah, body sensation, hearing, seeing, a breath, emotion, happiness, just moment after moment. So the effort that we make is a light touch, moment after moment. And these two, mindfulness and that light touch of effort, create the momentum of mindfulness. That is concentration. A momentum of mindfulness, moment after moment, the stability of mindfulness is a form of concentration. It's what we could call moment-to-moment concentration. It's not focused on any one object, but it's a very powerful state of mind where the mindfulness is more continuous. It begins to see and stabilize just this is what's happening. This is what's happening. And there's much less room for the mind to get pulled out into hindrances or lose its mindfulness. So that is a form of concentration, and it's a very powerful form of concentration that allows us to really see what's happening in our minds. So the mindfulness, the awareness, the light touch of effort creates the conditions for the concentration to happen. In this whole process, it's also useful because how we are in relationship to experience is often hidden from us. When there's a little bit of sense of awareness with a little bit of continuity, maybe not a lot, but just, you know, yep, there's awareness, knowing, body sensation, and just seeing the shift of experience from experience to experience. Then it can be useful to also take in or kind of check in with maybe the question again, the use of question. What's the relationship to experience? How am I in relationship to this experience? This is a not a question I think to bring in with every moment. It gets too busy. But if there's a little bit of a sense of stability, a little bit of a sense of, yep, knowing what's here and how am I in relationship to it? That's a good question to bring in, because often the relationship is hidden from us. It's kind of behind the scenes. It's so habitual, we don't notice it. So kind of consciously checking in, you know, okay, yep, this is what's happening. And how am I in relationship? Sayadaw Tejaniya calls this the attitude. And he uses the phrase, check the attitude, check how the mind is in relationship to experience. So what's the attitude? How am I with this? What's happening and how am I with it? Also for me, just the kind of broadening to just, okay, yep, that's what's happening. What else is going on around, you know, around this experience? Sometimes that touches into the relationship. So noticing the relationship to experience, checking into the attitude, we may or may not notice anything in particular. Again, we're not trying to figure it out. It's almost more like the question of how am I in relationship to experience might kind of open our minds to recognize, oh yeah, that's going on. I didn't notice that. But just the kind of bringing in that question can help the mind to see something that it hadn't seen. But it's not a looking for it. And so in that question, you can just bring that question in and just keep being aware of what's here. You don't have to find an answer. At some point, or maybe sometimes it's really quick. Sometimes it's obvious. It's like, oh yeah, what's happening here is there's that unpleasant thing and I don't like it. Okay, that's what's happening. When we do notice a relationship to experience, there's nothing in particular we need to do other than recognize that as one of the things among many that's happening. Yep, there's that unpleasant experience and not liking. That's what's happening. This begins to create the conditions for us to have an okayness with seeing the unpleasantness and the not liking. That's what's happening. Sometimes just the seeing of an attitude can, it feels like it creates a bigger container in which we can just be aware of that's everything that's happening. That container of mindfulness that is not reactive. So we check the attitude and we may see some kind of greed, some kind of aversion, some kind of delusion, some kind of disconnection or confusion. And we might also, another flavor of attitude, I mean, the four basic flavors of attitude related to, three of them related to the triumvirate of greed, aversion, and delusion. Three of the attitudes, you know, most of our attitudes, most of the reactive kind of attitudes or attitudes that create challenge will fall into one of these three. And so, you know, is there that wanting something to be a certain way? Is there a wanting to get rid of something, push away something? Is there a confusion or an idea, a view, a belief around what's happening? Greed, aversion, and delusion, attitudes. So, those three will tend to cause some kind of stress or suffering in our experience. And then the fourth kind of attitude, the fourth flavor of attitude is what Sayadaw Tejaniya calls wise attitude. It's an attitude that is okay with what's happening as it's happening. There's not a problem with what's happening. When what's arising is simply okay in our experience, that's wise attitude. When the mind is observing experience in a way that lets you feel ease with whatever's happening. So sometimes that flavor of attitude is also subtle. You know, we're noticing things and it's like, oh, well, what's the attitude? Well, I don't know. Seems okay. But we don't think of that okayness as being something to notice. It's actually really powerful to notice. Yeah, well, things are happening here. There's not a particular reaction. That's really powerful to notice. So sometimes when it feels like there's not particularly something that's obvious, we might try that on. It's like, does it feel like there's okayness here? And then what is that like to be okay? Sometimes it's a really subtle kind of ease that is so quiet that we never would have noticed it if we hadn't opened up and checked. And what is the relationship? And there's often when we check the attitude that it does reveal some kind of stress or struggle or greed, aversion, view, belief, idea. And again, when we notice that, perhaps we can be aware of it without having a problem with that it's here. It's actually okay to notice some kind of reactive attitude. Those reactions, those reactive attitudes are only a problem when they're not known, when they're not seen. When they are seen, that capacity of mindfulness to begin to work its, use its wisdom to massage and to help the mind to understand and to begin to orient to letting go, that is able to happen. So there's nothing we need to do to fix or change an attitude other than to become clearly aware of it. And sometimes Sayadaw says we get to know wise attitude. We get to wise attitude. We get to that place of okayness by getting to know the unwise attitude really well. So curiosity, really important. What is that experience of not liking something to be here? This experience of something unpleasant and not liking it. Can you open the awareness to hold both and just notice, well, what's that like? What's that like? So these are the basic components of the practice. It's amazing, such a simple practice takes so many words to describe. But some of it, I think, is, you know, some of the reason it takes so many words is because it's really orienting us to see things we haven't seen so clearly. And it's also orienting us to pay attention in a way that's not very habitually familiar. So kind of to reorient and to begin to stress the, or to emphasize the value of this very non-doing practice. It's not easy for us to sit in a field and just receive. We want to get involved. We want to do something. And so to really emphasize that value and the value of the curiosity. The great thing about this part, one of the great things about this is that it often doesn't take too long to in exploring this way that you begin to get a taste of how it's valuable. And sometimes how much fun it is to just watch the mind. You know, it can be very interesting. So the pieces of this practice, we start with relaxation. We recognize the awareness and notice what's obvious. There's a light touch of effort, really light. Just enough for this moment. Can you know this moment's experience? And then from time to time, check in. How am I in relationship to experience? Those are the basic pieces. Relax, aware of what? Relax, aware of what? And occasionally check how you are in relationship to experience. So we'll take a 10-minute break right now, and then we'll come back and do a meditation together. So back at, well, 10 minutes. We'll just do 10 minutes.